Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Harris Cherokee Resort. Find us online at caesars.com/harris-cherokee.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
A little bit of drama with some of Kirby Smart's press conferences this week, and that in and of itself is kind of news because over the course of time, now I love the subject matter, so I'm always interested in everything that Smart has to say, but over the course of time, some of these press conferences can be a little bit monotonous. They can not exactly provide a whole lot of details one way or another. I mean, let's face it, the media who's there, and that's typically not me because I'm usually locked here in this box, our Dog Nation World Headquarters studio, so I'm not in Athens too much during the week, but those who are there, it is their job to try to get interesting answers from Kirby Smart so they can deliver it to their audiences, the UGA fans who read or listen, watch their content. That's the media's job. Smart, I'm sure, thinks his job is to sometimes say as little as possible to keep the real inner workings of the Georgia program in-house, and that's always going to be the natural tension that exists. Press conference from the media who wants something, Kirby Smart, the coach who doesn't want to give it, and maybe a little bit more dramatic example of that, as I said a couple of times this week. Obviously, you know the backstory here. Georgia lost a game on Saturday, a game in which the offense didn't play well. There's a pocket of Georgia fans will say that the South Carolina result was actually something that had been building for a while, that Georgia hadn't played great offensively for the full game in any point in time this season, maybe as a team hadn't exactly put four great quarters together at any point in time, and for some people, they're going to point the finger at James Coley. This is either because it deserves to happen or because every fan base is unhappy with his offensive coordinator every time that team loses a game. You can decide for yourself which one's more true when it comes to the Georgia fan criticism of Coley, but it has been substantial enough that Kirby Smart was asked about it first on Monday. Smart, however, not wanting to give the reporter in this case what he wanted. Take a listen to this.
Your assessment of James Coley to this point as an offensive coordinator, and also in general, how much do you sort of immerse yourself in offense, and how much of his play calling is influenced by basically what you want or something maybe you say to him in headphones?
Yeah, we're definitely looking forward to Kentucky right now. It's the biggest concern we've got, and we're going to focus on that. You know, I think the most important part of an offense is scoring points, and that's the most important thing. Now, how do I get to those points? Do I get to them through explosive plays? Do I get through them through long, methodical drives, which has so far been our MO? That's been the identity we have of long, methodical drives. And we've had some really good, long, methodical drives. But at the end of the day, we're all judged by, number one, how do I score points? How do I protect the ball? And how explosive can I be? And that's what we're focused on.
So that's almost his, for those of you aware of this, Bill Belichick on to Cincinnati moment where the reporter there wants to say, Kirby, tell me about James Coley. Give me an evaluation. Give me a report card on Coley through a halfway point in this season. And Kirby Smart says, we've turned the page here to Kentucky, which is not the answer the reporter sought. And frankly, for the dog fans who listen in on that kind of stuff, who watch it at our Dog Nation YouTube page and things along those lines, they want more of an answer from Kirby on how he views the job that Coley's doing right now and how much freedom and autonomy Coley has to run the offense the way that he wants to, or how much freedom and autonomy Jim Chaney had before that. Those are some things that dog fans want to hear some more answers from Kirby Smart on, but in this case, Kirby Smart did not want to give it. Now, fast forward to Tuesday. Tuesday, which was last night. Same question again. Kirby, you were asked on Monday about James Coley. Didn't quite get your answer on that. Would you mind going into a little bit more detail on that again? Here's an exchange with another reporter and Kirby Smart from last night.
James Coley, six games. What did you feel like he's done well as a coordinator? What's kind of your overall evaluation of him?
I talked about it the other day again. I'm not judging and basing things on that. I mean, that's not for us. Public opinion. I think that right now offensively we've got an identity that we've got to create more explosive plays. We cannot turn the ball over, and if you don't turn the ball over, you're really not talking about a lot of things, because when you go back and watch the tape, there was a lot of successful runs in there, as many as there were that weren't. And like I said, we've never lost a game that we were efficient in the run game. It's hard to make our efficiency chart, and we made it. Now, again, some of those are third and ones. Do you get a two-yard gain? That's a successful run on third and one. If it's third and goal and you score and it's a two-yard gain, it's not good for your average, but it's great for your efficiency. And that's what we go off of. So
there's something that Kirby Smart says there that I think is pretty interesting. You know, when he's asked, hey, what do you think about James Coley? he says, oh, I talked about this yesterday. Now, sometimes when Kirby gets asked a two-part question and sometimes he only answers one part of the question, you're kind of left to wonder, did he just forget the other part or did he not want to answer that? Well, in the case of what Kirby said yesterday, remembering that he had been asked about this the day before and choosing not to answer it, pretty clearly this all seems intentional on Kirby Smart's part, that media, in some cases fans, want Kirby to evaluate James Coley through halfway through the season. The fact that the offense, even in addition to the turnovers that happened on Saturday, some UGA fans feeling like it didn't do too well, they want to hear from Kirby on that, and Kirby says, no, not right now. I'm not going to talk about that because we believe the offensive formula we have in place will work. It has worked. It's going to work again. Now, here's where I want to try to be just a little bit self-aware for a moment, because those of you who listen or watch Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resorts every day, have for a long time, you know that I believe that the Georgia offense needs to change, and I'm going to emphasize this phrase, a little bit. I don't think it needs to be drastically different. I don't think Georgia needs to wave a magic wand, become a Big 12 team overnight, or anything like that. I just think it needs to be a little bit different. I think Kirby's reliance on, as he calls it, long, methodical drives and efficient in the running game, that's really worked for Georgia, but sometimes I'm a little fearful that when the defense knows that's what you want to do and what you're trying to do, and then they game plan to take that away from you, I'm a little bit concerned about what I view as sometimes a lack of a counterpunch from Georgia in that regard. Admittedly, when it comes to Kirby Smart's overarching offensive philosophy, I've been a little bit critical of that, and I wouldn't be voicing that criticism if I didn't think I was right about that. However, the other thing that I feel like I need to admit and say to all of you today is, hopefully I am nothing if not self-aware. And the advice that I would give Kirby Smart in this situation is probably very, very different than the advice I'd give almost anybody else facing a similar situation where you have some critics. I mean, in this case, I am a critic of Kirby Smart. In this case, many of you have been critics of Kirby Smart. And to our friends and our family who are starting new ventures, opening businesses, creating something, anything like that where you have to kind of put yourself out there in the world, what do we typically tell people? We typically tell people to ignore the critics. Oh, listen, you can't listen to what people online say. You can't listen to what the critics say. You can't do that. You've just got to do what you think is right. That's what we tell almost everybody in every situation. And yet in this particular instance, hopefully we're all self-aware enough. I'm trying to be self-aware enough to say that the advice that we would give to Kirby Smart is completely different than the advice we'd give to anybody else. To Kirby Smart would say, listen, Kirby, when you got, you know, hundreds of thousands of Georgia fans all saying the same thing, they can't all be wrong. You need to listen to your critics. You need to change your offense. And Kirby Smart says, listen, I didn't get to where I am in life right now, making the millions of dollars that I am, leading a, you know, huge institution like Georgia football, by trying to keep my finger on the pulse of online critics and blowhard podcast hosts and people like that. I've got to have the courage of my own conviction and do things the way that I think they need to be done. And I'm not quite so sure that leads to good coaching, but it is probably an example of good leadership. And it kind of reminds me of something that Mark Richt was, you know, very fond of saying. Probably what at least three different instances in his coaching career, he cited the famous words from Theodore Roosevelt. The most recent example I could find at Georgia was near the end of his tenure in 2015. There was an AJC column from Jeff Schultz about that. For those of you that are not aware of the Roosevelt quote, let me show it to you on the screen. Now, this is as highbrow as we'll ever get on this program. We don't typically delve into history too much, but here's Roosevelt from 1910. He says, "It's not the critic who counts. It's not the man who points out where the strong man stumbled or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who's actually in the arena, who's been devoured. Win or lose, at least he wasn't one of those timid souls that knew neither victory nor defeat." That was Theodore Roosevelt in 1910. Mark Richt, I think, cited this three times at least during his coaching career, twice at Georgia, once when he was the coach there at Miami as well. And when Richt would bring that up, sometimes there'd be Georgia fan pushback on that, and seemingly reasonably so. Georgia fans saying, "Who are you to tell me that I can't criticize you because I'm not in your so-called arena, because I'm not the coach? I'm not allowed to have an opinion on anything that goes on." Well, in that column from 2015, when Richt started this again, he kind of pushed back on the pushback to the people who said that thought that he was saying they weren't allowed to criticize him. Let me show you this quote from Richt in 2015. Richt said, "I'm not saying people shouldn't say what they think. People have a right to say what they think. Everybody in the media has a right to say what they think. I don't get mad at anybody, if y'all wondered." That's Richt from 2015, AJC. You can go to AJC.com in the archives and read the full column for yourself. And what this has to do with Kirby Smart is the same thing's kind of true right now, that It remains to be seen if Kirby Smart's coaching philosophy is good coaching. I suspect that he's going to run into some problems if he doesn't change his offense a little bit. But in this particular case, I'm just a blowhard critic sort of outside the playing field, outside the arena. And it's probably good leadership from Kirby Smart to completely ignore what I think about this and maybe to completely ignore what you think about this too. I mean, we all know what's at stake for Kirby. He is at Georgia at a time in which an unbelievable level of talent has been amassed. And if he manages it correctly, and if he manages the scenario on the field correctly, he can go down in history. Not just like modern day history, but all time great Georgia coaches, all time great college football coaches. He can go on quite a run here and give Georgia fans something they've been craving, which is a national championship. And ultimately, how do you achieve that? Well, I guess the best way to do it is to deep down do what you believe is best. And for Kirby, apparently he is very, very committed to the idea that he needs a lot of running and maybe only a little bit of successful passing. And some of the stuff that we think we see that would make the passing game better, maybe Kirby Smart just doesn't believe that. There's a chance he might be wrong from a coaching standpoint, but it's probably right from a leadership standpoint, and I guess we're all left to see where Kirby Smart takes this the rest of the way. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Available to you a lot of places, live on video, 10 a.m. Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio at noon, on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. And we're brought to you today by Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort and Harrah's Cherokee Valley River. Two great casino resorts right there in the state of North Carolina, both less than a three-hour drive from Atlanta, which means it's really easy to get to. Of course, you know Harrah's Cherokee Valley River. They got all the great casino stuff. Really hot slot machines, table games, baccarat, roulette, also a 300-room hotel, and one that I really enjoy visiting every chance I get, the Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort. It's a huge, huge venue, over 1,100 rooms. They got 10 dining options, a lot of great restaurants, all kinds of amenities. There's a spa, of course, the great casino that you all know about there as well. And coming up at the end of this year, the book is going to open. That's right. Sports book, sports gaming is coming to Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort and Harrah's Cherokee Valley River. The book is going to be available for you. Ultimate sort of sports bar, sports book experience. You can kind of settle in there, watch a bunch of games. It's going to be a great time. All kinds of TV showing all these games. Website to go to Caesars.com/Harrah's-Cherokee/casino/the-book. I know that's a big mouthful to say, but if you just search for Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort and the book, the sports book, I'm sure you're going to be able to find that. Great to have Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort as part of Dog Nation Daily here today. Also, a couple other pieces of business to take care of. We have had a huge response to Dog Nation Invasion coming up in Jacksonville for the Georgia-Florida game. A lot of you going to DogNationInvasion.com to get your tickets for that. Luxury tailgate experience, all inclusive. That means food, beverage, everything else. Of course, the whole Dog Nation team going to be there. Myself, Connor Riley, Jeff Sintel, Mike Griffith. The first 150 people to sign up are also going to get a Gator Hater t-shirt. And I know that's a huge, huge commodity. A lot of you have been saying, when are we going to do these again? Well, that's right now. So go to DogNationInvasion.com. Join us from 11:30 to 3:30 on the day of the cocktail party for our Dog Nation Invasion tailgate. It's all brought to you by Kroger, R.S. Andrews, and our friends at Peach Pass as Dog Nation gets ready to invade Jacksonville. Dog Nation Invasion of Jacksonville and Gator Hater t-shirts to be had. It's DogNationInvasion.com for more details on that. All right, let me go around the doghouse here today. Brought to you by our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And some of y'all know I'm a little bit of a dork. I like the stat blogs. And one in particular, which has been interesting this week, are our friends at Football Outsiders, who have for the first time this year, through 7 weeks, presented their FEI ratings. These are efficiency metrics. I don't quite know how they're always tabulated, but there are some interesting things to be had and found in some of this kind of stuff. First of all, when it comes to what happened to Georgia on Saturday against South Carolina, pretty interesting to see that the Gamecocks defense, according to the just-published FEI defensive efficiency metric, this is the number 6 defense in the country. So, listen, I don't think that excuses what happened to Georgia on Saturday, but for those of us, me included, who've kind of said South Carolina is a bad team at 3-3 defensively, at least according to Football Outsiders, they're not doing so badly here. The other thing that I kind of thought was interesting is Georgia's offensive efficiency metric right now is 13th in America, according to Football Outsiders and the FEI. It's kind of weird. For as many complaints we've had about the Georgia offense, statistically, it's always a little bit hard to find the numbers to back up the point we want to make. Now, there are some areas in which Georgia's not doing well. I know DJ Shockley saw on the SEC Network this week the fact that Georgia's 94th in in the country in yards after the catch, for instance. But when it comes to the overarching efficiency metrics, the Georgia offense still doing pretty well. 13th out of 130 is not so bad. That puts you in the 90th percentile overall. However, there's something defensively that I think is pretty interesting here. Georgia 11th in the defensive efficiency metric right now. Compare that to another national championship contender like Oklahoma, which is just 45th. Kind of giving you an idea that the Georgia defense is still helping it keep pace at what could be a championship contention level. But there's probably more improvement even in that area that needs to be provided, and some young players who might eventually provide that. One of those is the Georgia freshman outside linebacker Nolan Smith, who Kirby Smart yesterday had some pretty complimentary things to say regarding. Here is Kirby on Smith.
He made a heck of a play in the game late. He's effort guy. You know, he runs that quarterback down late in the game, and just extremely a good effort. He had two times that he's – you know, that he's right all over the quarterback as he's throwing the ball on boots and nakeds, and that was a really athletic guy. So I think he's improving rapidly. He played the counter well, which is, you know, one of his pitfalls is going to be playing a run against big people, and he did an excellent job squeezing and bouncing back. I mean, he continues to get better and show promise, and we're playing him quite a bit.
Our buddy Connor Riley mentioned Nolan today as well in his Good Day UGA piece about guys that may step up over the second half of the season. A more significant contribution from Nolan over the second half, I think, would be huge for Georgia. Let me give you one more quick stat here to back this up. I mentioned before that Georgia's 11th in defensive efficiency, according to the FEI metric at Football Outsiders. Let me dive a little bit deeper on that. When it comes to percentage of defensive drives that result in a touchdown, Georgia's 6th in America right now. But when it comes to turnover rate, percentage of defensive drives for Georgia that result in a turnover, fumble, or interception, Georgia's just 82nd at the moment. So what that tells you is that Georgia's been very good at preventing points from being scored, which is a good thing. And the next step for the Georgia defense to truly be dominant is to also be more impactful with negative plays and turnovers. And a guy like Nolan Smith stepping up, I think, gives Georgia a chance to really do that. It's Around the Doghouse. It's presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Of course, our friends at ESOG are a solutions-based company. So when it comes to issues like a cracked foundation or water creeping into your basement or just any kind of like dampness where it's not supposed to be, if it's a simple fix, they'll provide that for you. But if it's something more complicated, and sometimes when it comes to foundation issues, it can be more complicated, ESOG is going to be able to help you out as well because they have two full-time engineers on staff. That's why we trust our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia, and you can trust them too. And I would invite you to give them a call right now at 678-ESOG-NOW. That's 678-ESOG-NOW. Dial that number. You can get in touch with Engineered Solutions of Georgia. We'll hear more from Kirby Smart later on in our program today. But for now, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. Hope you enjoy our buddy Mike Griffith.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
All right, Mike Griffith joins us here, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. Mike, you've been around the world of college football for a long time. You know how the timeline operates after a loss. For many fans on Sunday, it is just total abject disappointment. Monday, a lot of that lingers. As you move towards Tuesday and Wednesday, kind of halfway through the week, there's start to be a little bit of a corner turned, maybe a belief that the sun will shine again at some point in time. And I think for Dog Nation, it's kind of been the same thing, operating around that same kind of timeline here over the last few days. So with that in mind, I ask you, where do you think that Georgia goes from here? Not so much a specific prediction on the end of the season, but in terms of picking up the pieces and putting it all back together, give me an idea how you think the next couple of weeks unfolds for Georgia.
Well, you know, to me, the spotlight shines on their season core. I mean, it's like it's isolated. It's like, okay, here it is. This is really what it is. Everybody's going to jam the box. Everybody's going to challenge Jake Fromm and his receivers. I mean, this is it. You know, backs to the wall. If Jake Fromm and his receivers can beat press man coverage, then Georgia still remains a championship contender. But if it's really as simple as playing press man coverage and forcing Jake Fromm to throw the ball to those perimeter receivers and Georgia can't execute that, well, that's a pretty major fail. Now, I'll say this, and I've wondered about this, and I hesitate to say this sentence, but would Georgia have won that game with Jim Chaney? Could Jim Chaney have come up with a plan B or a plan C or a plan D? And that's another area that we're looking at right now is what next for Georgia? How do you get your way out of this? When plan A doesn't work, where is the plan B? And unfortunately, I think Lawrence Cager was plan B. You know, he won that game against Notre Dame with some big catches in the second half. He had three third down conversion catches in the first half against South Carolina. He was the press beater. He was the guy that Jake Fromm could turn to. And if Lawrence Cager's out or limited, I think it comes down to what next and what can James Coley possibly scheme up to work around this solution to this problem that they're dealing with.
So I want to ask you about Coley in a minute to follow up on what you said there, but let me also address the wide receiver situation that you brought up. I've been emphatic now, really for kind of a long time, certainly coming off of what happened on Saturday, that Georgia, I believe, has four receivers who have a far greater chance of being dynamic than the rest of the group. And you know who it is. It's Cager when healthy. It's Pickens. It's Robertson. And I believe it's also Blaylock, even though he's been used less than the other three have been. I just think that when he has been used, he's kind of, you know, paid off there. The other guys, is this is backed up, statistically speaking. Their yards per target, their number of times moving chains or scoring touchdowns when thrown to is just much higher than the other guys. I think that the statistics speak for themselves on that. However, I also want to be at least a little bit self-aware and open to another possibility. The other big thing that I've been harping on Georgia missing right now are those long runs, 20-plus yard runs. Now, some of those are being stymied because the Georgia running backs aren't getting, you know, past the line of scrimmage in some cases. But when it comes to what we saw last year, you know, big runs from DeAndre Swift in the Kentucky game, for instance, are the absence of downfield blocks preventing some, you know, 7 or 8 yard runs from becoming 20-yard runs or and even, you know, 40-yard runs? I mean, I guess I at least want to be open to the possibility that part of the reason why the wide receiver rotation is as deep as it is right now, deeper than I think it should be, is that maybe if you're watching the film, eye in the sky type stuff, maybe you're seeing that the guys who are the best targets of catching the football aren't necessarily the guys who are the best at opening up for DeAndre Swift and Zamir White and Brian Herrien and James Cook. I at least want to be open to that possibility. How would you respond to that?
I think that's a good possibility. You know, Kirby Smart mentioned it in his press conference yesterday. A couple of things that address what you just brought up. He said, you know, when you're running 90 or however many plays you're in, whether they're 95, you can't have the same three or four guys out there every play. So there needs to be some degree of rotation. But he also said on the topic of the long run, BA, that it comes down to guys holding their blocks a little bit longer, and that makes the difference between a 10 or a 12-yard run and maybe a 70 or 80 home run by DeAndre Swift, as we saw last year. So, you know, we circle all the way back, you know, to when those three receivers went to the NFL, and, you know, J.J. Holloman got himself kicked off the team. That was costly. J.J. Holloman was one of the better downfield blockers on the team, and he was going to be the go-to guy. You know, what he did was incredibly stupid and selfish, and, you know, his absence really hurts the football team right now. Georgie's tried to move on. I think Kirby did an incredible job adding two very capable graduate transfers in Eli Wolf and Lawrence Cager. I think Wolf has filled modest shoes to an extent, enough of an extent to call that a successful transfer. And I think Cager's come in and done a remarkable job, but, you know, this separated shoulder that he's been playing through, you know, boy, that's tough. I mean, the guy had a separated shoulder, and he was out there playing football. That's pretty remarkable. And, you know, then he suffered a rib injury. But so now it comes down to the two freshmen. I mean, we're running out of chances here for Georgia, BA. You know, the transfers, the freshmen. You know, I think the guy that should be nervous is Cortez Hankton, the receivers coach. I mean, as you said, the best receivers have been the transfers and the first-year guy. Where is the player development? Where is the player development from Cortez Hankton, the receivers coach? He's the one responsible for guys like Matt Landers running the wrong route. Can't have that in year three of a receiver.
So let's be like armchair coaches here for a moment. Kirby Smart has now said multiple times, I've played some of the audio even on today's show, that, hey, you got to limit turnovers. We all know that's true. Four turnovers against South Carolina was a killer. That's not even worth debating. Everyone knows that. But even beyond that, Kirby says, hey, you got to be more explosive. Got to add to the explosion, you know, the explosive plays, the offense. Obviously, I'm not qualified to call plays at the SEC level. That doesn't mean we can't opine on it right now. Mike, how would you suggest more explosive plays be added to Georgia's arsenal right now?
Well, I don't think it's plays. I think it's players. I think, you know, I think it's a lot of the same plays they dialed up last year, but, you know, that aren't explosive because that receiver doesn't get that block 15 yards downfield, or because, you know, Matt Landers doesn't run under that throw that maybe Mecole Hardman would have from Jake Fromm earlier this year. I think it comes down to players. I think players make plays explosive. I mean, I've seen this many times before in other programs, you know, where the team has the exact same offensive coordinator, and, you know, one year they say, oh, man, what an explosive offense, and the next year it's, oh, it's not an explosive offense. It's because it doesn't have the same players. And, you know, to me, that's what it comes down to. It comes down to receivers or running backs making people miss in space. It comes down to, you know, quarterbacks, you know, throwing to the right shoulder and throwing receivers open. I didn't think Jake Fromm did that. So I don't want to give him a complete pass, no pun intended, even though I think two out of the three interceptions we could attribute to Tyler Simmons not catching a ball that was right in his hands and knocking it 5 feet in the air, or, you know, Matt Landers running the wrong route. Okay, so that's two out of three picks that we put on the receivers. You know, but Jake wasn't on all day. Jake wasn't throwing people open. Jake was a little high or a little low to DeAndre Swift downfield, and he was missing. So it was everything. It was Trey Hill with poor snaps because he was getting his butt kicked by the South Carolina defensive lineman. That was affecting the snap. That was affecting the timing of the play. And Georgia just couldn't come up with the answer. So I know that's a really long-winded answer to your question, but I think it comes down to players and execution. I don't necessarily think there's many magic bullets. Now, maybe two or three a game. You know, we saw Jim Chaney scheme up a really nice double move with max protection for Tennessee against Georgia. Maybe you pull one or two of those out of your hat. But for the most part, I think it comes down to putting players out there that can execute the plays.
Well, I don't completely disagree with that. I mean, as I said before, I think that Pickens and Robertson and Cager and Blaylock are likely more explosive than Georgia's other receivers, so they have the best chance of explosive opportunities. But let me cite Robertson in particular, though, as an instance of where I want to push back on you a little bit. If I've got the numbers right, and I think I do, Robertson was targeted 9 times on Saturday that only goes for 5 catches. That ends up making the overall yards per target number not look all that great. Now, I don't know that Robertson's Georgia's best receiver, but because of his speed, I do believe he is now Georgia's most important receiver because speed seems to be lacking from that group at least a bit right now. So that's an example of, hey, it's more than just get the explosive player involved. I think you've got to find a way to scheme up a way to get Robertson more open. I mean, take, you know, the big, you know, throw near the you know, to the end zone near the end of the game where, you know, that's just kind of a low percentage throw all the way around. Robertson's the kind of guy that has speed that ought to be able to run away from guys if you are targeting him properly. So while I mostly agree with you that you've got players, some who are just more explosive than others, you need to involve them more. Robertson's an example of an explosive guy, potentially explosive guy anyway, who may not quite be targeted in quite the right way. That's an example of where I think that Georgia does need to scheme him open a little bit more. Pickens is going to be blanketed with double coverage pretty much every single time. There's not a ton you're going to be able to do about that. But in Robertson's case, because of his speed, seems like there's something you ought to be able to do about that.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting dilemma because one of the things that press coverage enables defenses to do is get to the quarterback and bring more pressures because they have the box loaded. So you have 5 guys in protecting and you've got 7 or 8 guys in the box. And if you turn 2 of those guys loose, they hit your quarterback. And that's not a trade that Georgia can make. And that's kind of part of this, too, that we have to consider into this equation. If you're Kirby Smart, and I think most people would agree with this, every game plan has to start with protect Jake Fromm. Because without Jake Fromm, the ship goes down. You cannot allow your quarterback to get hit, and particularly when the drop-off is considerable as it is. And everyone can, you know, marvel about what Stetson Bennett did in a G-Day game, but at the end of the day, he's a walk-on junior college undersized quarterback that's not going to win an SEC championship for you. So you have to protect Jake, and you have to be mindful of that. So you can't really have, and I think you brought it up, some of these longer developing routes that it takes for a guy like Demetrius Robertson to get available or get open. So one of the things we talked about, well, what about the quick passes? So now we're talking about the him plays, as Kirby Smart calls it, where the ball's going to him no matter what. Jake doesn't actually make the read and find the open guy. And now we get, now we're bringing it back to the philosophy. Do we want to channel the ball to one person that we think makes the best play or gives Georgia the best option? Or do you want to give Jake Fromm the opportunity to make a pre-snap read and get it to the person that he feels has the best matchup on that particular play? So as we can see, this becomes a very complex issue the deeper we delve into it.
There was something pretty interesting from the radio broadcast that I want to finish up with you on before we say goodbye to you, Mike. Before that, though, let me remind folks that tomorrow is a big day for Dog Nation. We're going to be live at the Marlowe's in Dunwoody for our Marlowe's matchup. Myself, John Stinchcomb, and boy, John had some great things to say on our program on Monday. He's going to have even more to say this upcoming Thursday. We're going to be live at Marlowe's in Dunwoody starting at 6 p.m. It's 1317 Dunwoody Village Parkway. The address, once again, 1317 Dunwoody Village Parkway. We'll have a live broadcast that starts at 6. We'll have a Q&A after that and just kind of hang out, enjoy some of the great Marlowe's chef-inspired food, craft cocktails, tomorrow night from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Marlowe's in Dunwoody for our Marlowe's matchup. And by the way, if you show up dressed in red and black and tell them you heard about it on Dog Nation Daily, you get a free appetizer tomorrow for showing up in red and black and telling the folks you've been hearing about Marlowe's right here on our program, Dog Nation Daily. So we'll see you tomorrow night, 6 p.m., Marlowe's in Dunwoody. All right, Mike, so I don't listen to the radio broadcast. I'm obviously sitting in the press box with you, but I've been made aware that before the game, Kirby Smart on Saturday was interviewed by Chuck Dattle, who's the sideline reporter, and Kirby seemed sort of flippant and, you know, kind of whatever at the time, but was like, hey, we got to get ready to play. And apparently Kirby wasn't happy with the pregame routine, pregame warm-up, didn't think it was as sharp as it needed to be on Saturday. So to me, that's kind of an interesting thing to hear from Kirby after the fact. I don't have the audio to play because it's kind of a right holders deal or whatever, but it did go down on the radio broadcast, which leads you to wonder how much of what may have happened for Georgia on South Carolina was aided by the fact that maybe the Gamecocks, for whatever reason, didn't have UGA's full attention. How much credence do you give to that on the basis of the fact that Kirby Smart essentially said on the radio broadcast before the game began that he thought his team needed to get ready to play the game? What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think it's legit. I mean, he said it afterward. He thought that they needed to be a little bit more physical in their warm-ups and bring a little bit more intensity. And, you know, I've seen this happen before, BS. I've seen a highly favored team lose a noon kickoff. I mean, you think about it, if you're Georgia, you know, you've been playing under the bright lights and bells and whistles and lights flashing and parades and you're all day and everybody, and now suddenly you've got this boring noon kickoff against a team you're supposed to beat by 3 touchdowns. And meanwhile, South Carolina's been, you know, scheming, you know, for a week off with, you know, axe and swords and ready to storm the castle. And that's exactly what the Gamecocks did. You know, physically, they were able to, match Georgia's physicality, and Will Muschamp was able to out-scheme his old friend. They pitched the perfect game. They hit all the fairways and hit all the greens. And, you know, Georgia, you know, for the life of them, couldn't stop hooking the ball off the tee. I think there's something to be said for that. I think it's a wake-up call. I think, you and Connor both, I think, have done a very good job of, you know, reminding people that, you know, I think 6 out of the last 8 teams that won national championships have lost a game during the regular season. The 2 that didn't were in the watered-down ACC. I think you've got to go back to an Auburn team in 2010 to find an SEC team that won a national championship with an undefeated mark. So, I mean, it's not the end of the world. To me, the biggest thing that came out of this, and I think you did a great job with it on your podcast yesterday, you talked about it, and I wrote a little bit about Dan Orlovsky today, and goodness, he played for 5 teams in 13 years. If anybody knows when a team has done it, would be a journeyman quarterback. That said, I think that the fact that Georgia has identified the problem gives them a chance to solve it. I mean, if we were sitting here right now going, geez, I just can't quite figure out what it is, can't put our finger on what it would be maddening. It would be a little bit of this and a little bit of that and a little bit. It's not. It's simple. It's completing passes against press coverage. And Georgia is either going to prove to have the talent and the coaching with Cortez Hankton, the receivers coach, to get this done, or there could be significant changes because Kirby Smart's not here to win 10 or 11 games. He's told you that. 24-5 is not good enough. It's not good enough to be sitting here with 7 or 8 games and the highlight of your season is to go down to Tybee Island and drink a few beers before you play Florida. That's old Georgia mentality. New Georgia is about winning championships and running the table. And Kirby Smart is one pissed off guy right now. I'm just going to tell you that. And if it doesn't get solved real fast, things are going to change around there. And that's where Georgia football is at right now, B.A.
Well, Mike, we'll certainly look forward to reading a bunch more from you about this as we head towards the game, the Wildcats on Saturday and the Kentucky Wildcats, and then everything to come after that. Thanks for being with us here today. Dog Nation Daily presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort.
Have a good one.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
You hear Mike kind of mention the Georgia-Florida game there at the end. Listen, I'm not even in a position to even talk about that right now because let me just hold off my thoughts on, you know, the idea of the world's largest outdoor cocktail party and coaches who want to cancel that at the moment. Let me just hold off on that. Instead, let me talk about the SEC Through here. And, of course, as we do, Kind of some interesting things being said about some key figures around the country when it comes to the Georgia loss. First, though, let me tell you about my friends at the UGA Alumni Association. I know many of you kind of have been in a similar situation before where, you know, you have this great community of people that you go through school with, and once you graduate UGA, you end up spread out all across the world, all across the country, certainly in many cases, and you're left to wonder kind of what your new social circle is going to look like. That can be kind of a challenging time for people as they embark on their sort of adult phase of life after being in college before that. Well, the good news is the folks in Dog Nation are never too far away. I don't mean us, Dog Nation. I mean Dog Nation in general, the people that you graduated from UGA with, because there are UGA Alumni Association chapters all across our great country. I'm talking about more than 324,000 alumni as a part of 80 different alumni chapters, and there's probably one close to you there as well. So there's a website you can go to. It's alumni.uga.edu/chapters. Well, that's kind of a mouthful, so let me say it again. alumni.uga.edu/chapters. There are game watching parties. There are civic projects to participate in. There's good sort of corporate professional networking opportunities, and it's just a great way to go through life with people who kind of have a similar outlook, similar background, similar stories. That's what the UGA Alumni Association provides, and it can provide that for you as well. alumni.uga.edu/chapters for more details. So I've counted at least three different non-Georgians or non-folks not connected to UGA who've sounded off on Georgia losing to South Carolina. Now, in every one of these instances, they're not volunteering this. They were asked those questions. Nick Saban was asked about it. Saban saying it just goes to show the value of not overlooking any opponent, essentially using that for his own benefit here as a message to his own team of, hey, did y'all see what happened to Georgia? They weren't paying attention to South Carolina, maybe, and they lost that game. Not surprising to hear Saban taking that tact. Dabo Swinney was asked about this, not so much from the standpoint of Georgia, probably a little bit more from the standpoint of the team that won, his in-state rival, South Carolina. Dabo kind of took this as an opportunity to say kind of the same thing of anything can happen in college football, but he made sure to point out the fact that North Carolina beat South Carolina and South Carolina beat Georgia in sort of a passive-aggressive way. It seemed like he was trying to say a little something about the ACC beating a team that was able to then beat one of the top teams in the SEC, so Dabo taking kind of a self-serving tact on that too. Someone else was asked about the game, and he didn't have much to say about it, but former Georgia quarterback Justin Fields was asked by the gaggle there in Columbus, Ohio, his thoughts. He didn't say much, but he said that he felt bad for Georgia, and he said he hoped that Georgia bounces back from that. Kind of a short, terse statement, but certainly no grandstanding from him, certainly no attention-seeking quote from him. He sort of answers it in a classy way and moves on, which just kind of goes to show you. There's a lot about the field situation I didn't always love when it was going down. Maybe some of the stuff from his camp, you know, maybe some of the way in which he was handled while he was here at Georgia. But for Fields in particular, he has never had a misstep in this entire thing. He's been pretty careful about everything he's ever said. And so I guess from that standpoint, you tip your hat to him a little bit there that you know, he kind of sidesteps that quote, moves on to something else. And so you get a lot of folks that are not Georgia being asked about the Georgia loss to South Carolina at the moment. I also thought this was kind of interesting. One of the online sports books that does Heisman odds has kind of re-released some stuff here. And for the most part, you've got Sam Ellinger, Texas quarterback, no longer having posted odds. Jake Fromm, after the game on Saturday, in a lot of sports books, his odds are no longer posted either. Trevor Lawrence has kind of fallen off the pace here. It looks like, based on the odds that are being posted by most sports books, some of the market leaders in particular, this race now is down to 5. You've got Tua Tagovailoa. You've got Joe Burrow. Burrow may actually be the actual favorite to win the award at the moment. Jalen Hurts from Oklahoma, obviously. Justin Fields is a part of this. And Jonathan Taylor, the Wisconsin running back. So the overall feeling is, among a lot of the betting public, it's the Heisman Trophy is now down to those 5 guys. And when you look at the way that a lot of these offenses have performed, hard to argue against that right now. We've given attention to at least 4 of these names a pretty good bit. Taylor and Wisconsin, boy. That's a pretty good team right now on the basis of almost any statistical measure you're going to look at. The advanced stuff, the more old-school basic stats. This is probably as good of 2 Big Ten teams, Ohio State, which has been well-documented, Wisconsin also. This is a pretty good-looking team right now. Kind of interesting to think about how they may play out in terms of the battle of maybe seeing those 2 teams play twice before the year is done. Then one more SEC through story to get to. Sounds like coming out of Columbia, South Carolina, that Ryan Helinski, the quarterback who was injured against Georgia, when that injury took place, it seemed like it was going to be pretty serious. Adam Anderson goes in trying to make the sack and end up getting him accidentally just a little bit low. And at the time, it looked a pretty serious injury, but it sounds like Halinski's going to be okay. So we'll monitor his progress here and see if he's able to go against the Gators on Saturday. If so, that obviously gives South Carolina, who's really only about a touchdown underdog, a chance to maybe pull another upset, in this time in Williams-Brice Stadium, which you know will be rocking and rolling after the Georgia game on Saturday. Carolina and Florida, maybe one worth watching there just at least a little bit. Could be kind of interesting, especially if Halinski really is indeed able to play. And for now, we'll make that your SEC through. And I kind of want to get back to something I was talking to Mike Griffith about a moment ago here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resorts. So there was the weird moment from the radio broadcast. I've heard about this. I can't play the audio for you, but it was essentially Chuck Daddle asking Kirby whatever pregame, kind of like the same sort of normal interview you always get. And Smart was a little bit fired up, saying he essentially insinuating that he wasn't happy with the warm-up, saying, you know, his team's got to get their behinds ready to play, although he didn't use the word behinds. He used a different word than that. He was not happy whatsoever. And when you see Georgia go out and play the game the way that it did, you're kind of left to wonder, well, was this Georgia just kind of sleepwalking through this game? Was this, as Mike Griffith mentioned before, noon start? Was this just a team kind of going through the doldrums of the middle of the season, especially for some young players who haven't played as intense of a level of football for as long as they've been asked to do that during their, you know, first year of college? Is that kind of what's going on here? Now, it's worth pointing out that in other instances when Smart's kind of talked about the same subject, he hasn't necessarily said the same thing on that. In fact, he was asked during the post-game press conference on Saturday if he saw this coming, and Smart's answer was, no, he didn't. Here's Kirby again.
No, I thought we had a good week of practice. I thought we had good practice prep. I thought we might be a little bit, you know, tired, but we went a little lighter on Thursday because of that. And you know, they did. They played a really good football game. But at the end of the day, we gave them four gifts. And four gifts, I think maybe three of them on our side of the field, or four of them on our side of the field. You know, you got to turn those into points.
So what I'm going to say now, I'm going to say strictly as a fan and not as a so-called analyst or, you know, professional broadcaster type. Speaking as a fan, if I had any reasonable certainty that Georgia did lose the game because they were overlooking South Carolina because they were not paying attention to the Gamecocks, honestly, given all the other potential answers to that question, this would be for me by far and away the most favorable, because to me it's the easiest to correct, right? I mean, as Nick Saban said a moment ago, hey, this just goes to show you don't overlook any opponent. That's sort of like the typical parable that coaches tell players, and it's kind of a tradition in college football of players not really listening to that necessarily, but it is sort of is what it is. If that really was the case, if that really was the reason that Georgia lost to South Carolina, boy, that'd be great, because you can easily fix that. Just be more focused, more attention. Mike mentioned the intensity with which you go through pregame warmups, the way in which you show up for a noon game. That's pretty easy to fix. I'm not quite so sure that's the answer in this case, but if it was, that'd be great news, because anybody can just sort of be more intense or more focused. I mean, anybody can do that. It's the flip side that's a little harder to correct, finding a way to be more explosive on offense, finding a way to kind of manage the philosophy of your offense so that it maximizes your potential. Those are challenges that are a little bit more difficult to deal with, and so given the choice of a good team not focused or a good team not maybe quite as sound, you would obviously rather be the good team that's not quite so focused there. So I'm not quite sure where that leaves you on that, but it was kind of interesting to hear Kirby Smart before the game on Saturday say that he wasn't quite happy with the look that he saw in his team's eye right before that game kicked off. My guess is, now it's a later start on Saturday, so not an apples-to-apples comparison, but in a later start against a team like Kentucky, which is thought to be as big an underdog almost as South Carolina was last week, I think we see a little different level of intensity and energy from Georgia against the Wildcats, and if I had to guess, I think that same thing will be true for every game for the remainder of the season there as well. Okay, we'll wrap up our program here, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. One more time, let me remind you, big doings tomorrow for us, live at the Marlowe's in Dunwoody. It starts at 6 p.m. for our Marlowe's matchup. Myself, John Stinchcomb, talking some UGA football with you in our video broadcast at first, and then kind of a special Q&A. Now, John was very, very, very strong words off the cuff this past week. My guess, I'm sorry, on the record this past week when he was with us on our program on Monday. No telling what he says off the record, off the cuff on Thursday. It's going to be worth seeing tomorrow, 6 p.m., Marlowe's Tavern, 1317 Dunwoody Village Parkway. That's the address, 1317 Dunwoody Village Parkway. All eyes on the cocktail party coming up in a couple weeks there as well. Y'all know how much I love the game, love the trip, love everything about it. Love the fact that it's been 1,082 days since Florida's beaten Georgia. It's our Gator Hater Updater, and we think that number is going to keep climbing. We look forward to celebrating it with all of you. We'll see you tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort.